Welcome to the Wizards of Dapps podcast, where we interview the creators of various decentralized applications in the Web3 ecosystem. We learn about how they are built and the insights that come from shipping. And we're your co-hosts. I'm Peter.
And I'm Bethany.
Welcome to the season 2 of Wizards of Dapps podcast. The apocalypse around us has escalated and upgraded, so of course we're bringing it back. Jokes aside, you know, it's good to kind of finally, you know, get back talking to builders, I guess. Today we talk to Jin, also known as DenkVR from the Metaverse Makers Masterminds, also known as M3. He's also contributed to CryptoVoxels and a member of Metafactory DAO. So today we really talk about how CryptoVoxels kind of built its grassroots community, you know, and how kind of, I guess, you know, captured the minds and hearts of all these different NFT artists. Why there's, you know, art galleries, why there's industry emerging there. And I guess, you know, how Decentraland kind of failed to capitalize, you know, to build on these and forge these early relationships within the NFT world. We kind of explore, you know, what went wrong, the trade-offs that were made, and, you know, where things can progress from now on. We also talk about all the challenges facing, you know, the metaverse and Web3. And we also talk about what Jin is really excited about today in the blockchain VR world. I hope you all enjoyed this episode. I certainly did talking to Jin. He's the guy to talk to about this, I guess. This podcast is also supported by 1KX Capital, and we're proud to be partners with them.
Welcome, Jin, to the Wizards of Dapps podcast.
Thanks for having me.
You are the first guest back with us, I guess, with season 2.
Oh, nice.
Jin, your Twitter handle is DenkVR, right?
Yeah, DenkVR.
Yeah, you're around the Web3 space, you know, namely around NFT communities, virtual world communities, such as CryptoVoxels. I came across your work and kind of who you are like about a couple months ago, and I've been quite curious since, you know, how did you end up in the Web3 space? What is your background for those who don't know about you?
I've been interested in basically building a decentralized metaverse ever since reading Snow Crash. Because I believe that if we're going to have a metaverse, that it should be decentralized because it is going to be like the successor to the World Wide Web, which is decentralized. And so I've always been interested in decentralization technology, like anything that's peer-to-peer. I got into crypto early in, you know, 2013 days and such, mining like Dogecoin and Litecoin and all that. And I built mesh nets before I got into VR, but when I got into VR, that was during the Kickstarter when Palmer Luckey made a Kickstarter for the DK1. I got one of those headsets.
What is the DKR? Do you want to explain what that is?
DK1, Dev Kit 1. It's the Oculus. It's the first dev kit. Yeah, it's ancient in terms of resolution and tech now. So.
Gotcha. So what kind of brought you into the virtual world space? Did you have a gaming background? What was that like?
I played MMOs growing up, and I used to play games competitively as well. So a number of MMOs and fighting games, those are my favorite. And I learned a lot about economics and RuneScape.
We had a really interesting conversation, you know, in Metafactory the other day, right? I guess in the Web3 space, it's like, you know, a couple like different communities around virtual worlds, right? From CryptoVoxels to Decentraland to Sunium space, right? And I guess, you know, like someone said, you know, like what went wrong with like Decentraland? Why are all the crypto artists on, you know, CryptoVoxels and not on, I guess, Decentraland? And I think that that was really interesting, like starting point, which kind of led down this like larger rabbit hole that was pretty fascinating. Quoting you, the metaverse isn't a tech revolution, it's a social and cultural one. I thought that was a really interesting comment. And do you want to expand on that?
Decentraland had their ICO for virtual land. And ever since they released their white paper and demo, I've been fascinated with it. And I jumped into the community and I wanted to be part of that. And they had a giant land sale later that year, December 2017, and sold like $28 million worth of land. And then after the hype kind of died down, it's like, okay, we got to get started building. Well, it wasn't until like almost over a year later that they didn't have any easy to use building tools. People had to use command line to even move things around and create their scenes with. So that kind of like, you know, introduced a barrier to entry.
When was this again?
We're talking like January 2018, right after the auction. People got their land tokens and now they're like, okay, what's next? And then, you know, they were just kind of figuring out their first SDK. I believe Ben Nolan was part of their team to build out their first client as well. And they were building with web VR frameworks too, which made it even more exciting. But I don't think anyone from their team has a background though in like VR or game development, which kind of raised some red flags, but they hired Ben and that kind of legitimized it a bit.
Decentraland actually came first and, you know, then CryptoVoxels kind of emerged later on, I assume.
Yeah, CryptoVox was April 2018, April 1st.
You have your dates, short history lesson, but I guess it's like, to your understanding, was Ben Nolan kind of involved within the crypto space before then? Or did Decentraland kind of bring him in? I'm not sure how much you know that.
Ben Nolan's been dabbling. He was working on a project called Fontis, and Fontis was kind of the same concept, like an A-frame based world with Ethereum smart contracts for deploying content onto these plots on the grid. And he's been working on the grid for a while. His previous project, Scene VR, there's a Medium article where he talks about the grid inspired like by Burning Man. And he's a diehard Snow Crash Ready Player One fan. So he just wants to build the metaverse.
Do you still remember, you know, when CryptoVoxels launched, or did they have like, you know, initial launch, or, you know, was it just like, here it is?
Ben Nolan's kind of like a rock star in the web VR community. So like web VR is small. Back then it was like, there is the Janus people, Mozilla and Ben Nolan for the most part. And then there is like Glam and, but yeah, so it was like everybody knew each other, and anyone who was building web-based virtual worlds like that could like be in virtual reality, it still is a very small circle. So we've done some interoperability experiments with his previous project, Scene VR. I remember the Janus team did some stuff where they could read his markup and, you know, explore with a secondary client. And yeah, that was cool.
So why do you think like all the crypto artists are like crazy, going crazy on, you know, I mean, like there's sort of this like mini economy of like digital like NFT art galleries on CryptoVoxels now, right? It's kind of funny that it's now like sort of a profession, right? And you have the monthly art meetup, right? How did it get there? You know, on one hand, you have like CryptoVoxels like forging this like really grassroots kind of like bottom-up driven community. And on the side, right, you know, there's less of it going on. And I guess just with crypto artists, right, that, you know, Decentraland's kind of missed the chance to forge a tight relationship. How do you think this happened?
Back last year, around April, Ben Nolan introduced a feature for having NFT picture frames to show off the NFTs that you own on your parcel. And right then and there, it drove a huge spike of interest from, it just like sent alarm bells ringing across the whole NFT community. And CryptoVoxels has a really easy, like built-in editor. It's almost like drag and drop. Just enter the URL and then place it in there, and then it's there. And when you click it, you get the OpenSea information page as well. So it's interactive. And then right after he deployed the picture frames, he started working on the ability for people to buy NFTs in world as well. And so that kind of lower barrier to entry for creating an NFT art gallery, especially with the building tools of like CryptoVoxels being like as easy as Minecraft, made it really appealing to artists who didn't have previous 3D experience.
Early tools make sense, right? But did you notice, you know, anything else in terms of like different?
I mean, people were sharing, and the way that people were building some art galleries, I remember some of the early, I don't know when a lot of money came into the scene, but when he did, like day one, his art gallery was just next level. And then, you know, it started to turn into like a kind of the grounds for, you know, if you're a crypto artist, like you got to have your virtual gallery, you know? And so people started to like create all these amazing galleries, and it became a whole scene in itself. And it just grew completely organically. Like CryptoVoxels is not driven by outside investors. It's completely bootstrapped from land sales. So it kind of added to this whole organic bottom-up growth that, you know, as well as Ben Nolan's Twitter style, it just was really broadcasted in a really cool, exciting, like, light.
Do you think that, you know, just like Decentraland being venture-backed had any influence over the kind of like this opportunities early on or in the MetaFactory chat, right? When you kind of broke it down, you didn't seem to like, you know, think it had a huge factor in it, but, you know, I'm just curious on how you think about it.
The land prices kind of outpriced a lot of the artists. So when Decentraland did their auction, they did a giant single land sale. And then everything on the secondary market, if you wanted a plot, you would have to pay around $400 USD in mana or so. And back then, crypto voxels, every parcel was still under one ETH. So that really, you know, made it more appealing for people to build out in crypto voxels just because of the land prices. I don't think it's really too much about the VC backed, but like crypto voxels, it was really fast to load and Decentraland didn't even launch. It was all private and closed. So they had their ICO in 2017 and then they only launched like 3 months ago in February. So for like 3 years, it's been closed beta and slow to deploy because they had to change engines a few times and rewrite their SDK and just kind of figure it all out. Ben has been live for 2 years now, and it's just right there, you know, go right there in your web browser and it'll look best.
Why do you think they kind of had to go for this? I mean, I guess it's like, if you were building a virtual world, how would you potentially go about building it? Let's say you were, you know, maybe part of the core team, right, at Decentraland or even CryptoVoxels again, right? And you were kind of like part of the efforts. You probably were, but, you know, how would you build a virtual world all over again?
I would definitely do my market research and reach out to the wider metaverse building community because I know that I wouldn't be the first one here trying to build a decentralized metaverse, and I'll just kind of be more active in discussions about the upcoming standards like WebXR and GLTF and VRM and, you know, who else is building in this space and just try and be friendly with all of them. And then I would definitely go for a web-based first approach and make sure that the scene is also like a really easy format, you know, something that's like for CryptoVoxel scenes, they're all like serialized as JSON backend and then rendered in Babylon.js. And for Decentraland, it's all TypeScript, but like the 3D content pipeline is important if you want to get traditional 3D artists or 2D artists involved. So like for VRChat, the biggest social VR platform, people build their scenes in Unity and then upload it to VRChat for free and their avatars. So I'd want to definitely build a strong content pipeline between the different game development environments like Blender. If you have a scene in Blender, you should be able to upload it straight into the virtual world from there. And it just becomes kind of an extension of that, you know, a way to deploy and show it off. Once you have that kind of tech foundation, the community is important. I would definitely try and be active in Discord, where I think Decentraland was trying to go for like the mass appeal of, you know, based on their kind of art style and low poly aesthetic and just the way that they market themselves versus CryptoVoxels. It started out black and white and, you know, Voxels, it was very punk rock and like no color.
Yeah, it cost $400 to get a piece of land back then with like, you know, Decentraland was, you know, cost not a lot of money with, you know, CryptoVoxels. I used to be a designer. We used to do a lot of motion design as well. Look, creative people are poor.
Yeah, nice. Did you do all those Loft Radio designs?
No, I didn't do that. A long time ago, I practiced, you know, motion design and how to, I guess, build communities of like different creative people, speed arts, 3D artists, you know, 3D motion designers. And, you know, CryptoVoxels reminds me of this like creator ethos, right? Where people care less about, you know, the what, I guess, but rather more about, you know, the ethos of like creating and sharing that with each other, right? I think it speaks quite a lot to the CryptoVoxels community that there's like, you know, these monthly rituals. Well, I don't want to, you know, talk about it and throw a bunch of people there and attract a bunch of people there, but, you know, not saying this podcast will have this monthly, you know, art gathering. Do you want to share a bit more about that?
I see so many events that are happening nowadays that are just like, you know, organized by different groups in the whole community. There's launch parties to new NFT projects, and that's kind of interesting. Like, there's in Gangnam, for example, they do have those art meetups.
Do you want to explain what is Gangnam for people who are unfamiliar with CryptoVoxels?
This kind of like cyberpunk synth wave district in which a lot of crypto artists have collaborated on building a fully fleshed out vision in the kind of northeast section of the map. And so when you go there, like, it is densely packed with art everywhere in every direction. And they really kind of try to build out a complete like world. Cause like in CryptoVoxels, people buy the parcels and you might not always have this, you know, your neighbor being building a cohesive vision with everyone else, you know, cause there's no kind of like estates. It's all individual parcel sales. But in Gangnam, it kind of differentiated by kind of centralized plan and how they went about it, collaborating to build out this cohesive vision. So it's become a center of events and art galleries and sort of driven inspiration for others to like, okay, let me start kind of accumulating a lot of adjacent parcels and build out a
neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly.
It's great to like, you know, see people almost drew from Metafactory. He got a deal from Ben, I believe, or another landowner, just because, you know, I guess they really liked what Metafactory is doing, as well as a pagoda. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, a lot of design, that one. It was super cool.
There's this like art meetup every month, right? Do you remember when that was created?
I don't remember. I've only been to a few, but it's one of many meetups that happen in CryptoVoxels. So it's all like community driven. Like people will have events, and like the work in progress meetup is every Thursday. The art meetup is, I'm not quite sure off the top of my head, but Conlin organizes that in Gangnam. And there was just a launch party yesterday for the Infinite NFT project. And I remember like there's a launch party for Metafactory 2, and it's a cool thing. Like if you're an NFT project, having a HQ in a virtual world and a launch party kind of puts you on the map, literally. And it's easier to kind of remember a location than it is like a URL. It broadcasts to a huge community of virtual world and crypto art enthusiasts as well.
Why do you think people have art galleries or create them?
Oh, I mean, it's become kind of like a synthesis of GeoCities and Minecraft. It has this whole early internet feel. So yeah, people just use it as it's like a bastion of self-expression. You know, they want to show off the NFTs that they own, and virtual worlds are the perfect kind of format to do that in. And it's like you have this whole grid of living 3D websites. So when you build out your art gallery and stuff, like you can share with your friend. And afterward, you check it out, and then you can take a walk down a street, and it just kind of becomes serendipitous, like the things that you discover. I see new stuff every time I drop in.
Where do you think, you know, CryptoVoxels is going? What do you think there's a lot of potential on which it can go?
I think it's become an amazing sandbox for prototyping the different components of what a decentralized user-owned virtual world can do. Like Ben Nolan, you know, he introduced the picture frames for sharing your NFTs and selling them in world. He's got wearables where people can create and mint their own avatar wearables. And now he's working on dance moves. And the stuff that I've been doing, yeah, those are pretty cool. And, you know, I think that bigger projects like, you know, the big metaverse stuff, what Epic Games is working on, might want to look at CryptoVoxels as like a test grounds for what things are actually working, and then maybe apply them in their labs per se for like, how can we like implement open standards and build a metaverse that's like more open and less controlled by a single entity, right?
How do you imagine like this playing out? You know, I guess the mainstream is like starting to wake up on the idea of like this avatar-based economy, right? Where everyone has their own avatar, you can buy clothes with them, you know, it's all skin-based. This kind of bled out of like gaming, right? Do you see like, I guess, Epic Games, the mainstream kind of like platforms swallowing up like, I guess, some of these indie platforms or identity platforms, or do you see them kind of existing side by side?
So this gets into the interoperability stuff I've been working on, in which like with CryptoVoxels, we built out some tools in which like there's a bunch of secondary clients now. Nick from he made Substrata, which is like a C++, like a way to view everything in his renderer. And then for me, I've been experimenting with the Unity pipeline when Ben Nolan open sourced the CryptoVoxels Unity project and was like, I'm just going to focus on the web client. I took that and I drove development to get some people to help make it a lot better. And then once we were able to essentially load in the parcels from the parcel cache into the Unity editor, we could then export those as meshes and then create custom like worlds that could be deployed in a number of platforms. So we deployed CryptoVoxels worlds in VRChat, which is the biggest social VR platform. They probably got like six-figure daily active users, Neos VR, and Janus XR, which is another kind of web-based virtual world platform. But VRChat is the one that in particular is interesting because in terms of number of users, and it's a skyscraper on Main Street and in comparison to everything else. They build everything for free. They don't know about yet what's happening in the Web3 space. So what I've been doing is to make, instead of asking them to come over here, I bring it over there and then we can talk about it in the world. And it makes a whole lot more sense as kind of like a, it's all around us and they can see like, oh wow, so hundreds of people collaborated on building this city. And yeah, we take group field trips there and it just, you know, it's their favorite platform and people want to be where their friends are at. And I think an open metaverse is going to have multiple ways to render the same virtual world. So kind of goes to the point of what NFTs also, you know, I hear it a lot in panels, like people want interoperability. They want their NFTs to work not just in one place, but what is ownership if it's platform locked in, you know?
It's almost like your interoperability, I don't know, interoperability inside these metaverses. You're trying to reinvent the URL or you're trying to create the URL for these worlds. I'm not sure if that's a good way of describing it.
That's what's happening right now in the big picture. In terms of the early internet, we, you know, we've got from IP addresses to URLs. And in Web 2, like we share a bunch of information through these social networks. And then now in the next iteration of the web becomes a place. We're overwhelmed with the amount of URLs that we're trying to, you know, sort and organize and bookmark. Humans are kind of more designed to remember places than they are like lists and memorized URLs and things. So I think it's just going to the internet and the web is going to unfold.
You're able to communicate so much more, right? If you can put someone in like, you know, I guess a meta environment, right? Where they're sitting down, they can see things around them. They can, you know, there's ambience, right? As opposed to just this like really, you know, like websites are a thing of the past, right? Why not talk to your website or talk to your app, right? Or play, like why aren't these apps just games?
Yeah, exactly. Right now, speaking of apps, like I do think there's this kind of two competing forces, you know, people who are building this app ecosystem out and people who are building this more web-like ecosystem out. And, you know, right now Unity is the leader of what people are building VR and AR experiences with. But when you build with Unity, you know, you're going to, in order to share your creation, it gets packaged up into an app. And there is not much compatibility with that app with other apps. And there's only like two app stores. So I think virtual worlds are ultimately going to be competing with the app store. In terms of the front page of like an app store or the web, it's not going to be like this choice of the hottest apps. Neighborhoods don't just like change overnight to like whatever the latest, it just gets deployed. It's like a slower moving structure, like cities forming is just like, it becomes an extension of like a community building in them and thriving in them. So I think that's how we're going to get to Snow Crash, where we'll have like downtown and a lot of other types of places in this one, like the metaverse being like this singular entity, which is like where virtual reality isn't just like you're another app store, but a place that you can visit. It's adjacent reality.
If I gave you a pill, right? And this once ingested, this pill would fast forward you 200 years later. What do you think it would be?
I think we would be probably brains. And in terms of how we're going to evolve, like virtual reality is like a direct brain interface, you know, it takes up all your senses and your eyes and ears and everything. And eventually it's going to merge with us, like, you know, as the devices get smaller form factor until it just becomes part of us. Have you read any of William Gibson's works, like The Peripheral?
No, I haven't. What is it about?
There's like the way of telepresence or like being able to control other physical things virtually. It gets into like transhumanist type stuff where, like, you know, right now we can remotely control robots, but soon that they can be like, you know, androids and stuff. So we'll be probably exploring the cosmos in like, you know, remotely, but like through these devices that'll make it feel and be as real as one can imagine, but even more so because we'll have enhanced senses, you know, super hearing, super sight, and physical capabilities.
Slow down time or perception.
Yeah, that too. That's going to be really cool because can you imagine computer vision plus super high frame rate cameras? Like, you'll be able to do some crazy superhuman stuff.
Yeah, you can just track yourself in an apartment and like cook yourself frozen pizza over and over again and just like refresh once you're like full. That's my version of like paradise.
That sounds cool. I mean, that could be a cool verse.
I mean, that's fairly far off, right? But you kind of clearly can see like where it can go. You're at this really great intersection of like, you know, blockchain and VR, right? Where did you get your first aha moments of both the VR side and the blockchain side, and then kind of both together?
In terms of blockchain, it's been hard to figure out. You know, I started experiment with like IPFS, and then they were talking about Filecoin, and I was like, oh yeah, that could actually power a whole metaverse in which it really scales. You know, if you want your experience to scale, you're going to, you know, if it gets really popular, it's going to get really expensive. And so Filecoin was going to solve a really interesting problem, like especially for these web-based worlds where the same deployment strategy is like a website, right? My friend James Boyacanu, he made a token exchange machine with Bitcoin.js where you can pay Bitcoin to get arcade tokens and play games in. And we also start to think about the possibilities with basic attention token and how it could be used in virtual worlds too, and just imagining the use cases. And I've also been interested in privacy tech for some time and going to do more research in this like during the summer. But like, you know, virtual worlds are already cashless worlds. And the saying goes like cashless societies are surveillance societies. So I'm interested in how like these tokens can not only reduce friction, but also like privacy is fundamental, like part of the culture of virtual worlds. Like nobody uses their real names to create their gamer tags. So I don't think that kind of information or using these services in which they risk giving out your private information is going to scale if we're going to create the ultimate virtual world society where people like live and work in them. That's when it gets real, when like it's part of your job to show up in the virtual world and work there.
You're in the virtual world working on a new, I guess, metaverse, and then, you know, just like Epic Games is spying on you.
Yeah, Epic Games, Facebook, I mean, you name it.
Just taking your shit.
And that's the thing with virtual reality equipment is they are data hoovers, not just, you know, in terms of the phone, like, it's supercharged because it's taking in the microphone and the tracking information and your reactions and soon like your eye, your pupils and all sorts of things. So it's going to do like, it's going to be instant psychoanalysis. And, you know, in terms of advertisers, that's like a gold mine. And so we're going to have to start thinking about how all that is going to...
The complications, right?
Yeah.
It's like pretty powerful technology and, you know, I guess... There's a good saying where it's like, you know, build what you fear. If you were the government, or if you were Facebook, let's say, you know, and you were just trying to like surveil and data mine people, what would you build to do so? Just like, you know, bring porn to web. I mean, like, that's one, I guess.
If I was nefarious, like if I really wanted to like pretend to be evil, I would build a Facebook, I guess. Just like it's normalized and you get the whole like graph of everybody's connections and it's already installed on people's phones and we're working on the next wave of technology.
That's hilarious.
Yes. So I'll build yet another Facebook, but I'm not sure if I would do it under the government name because I don't think many people would trust it as much as a private corporation.
I've heard some pretty interesting conspiracy theories about how, like, you know, the Chinese government's using Tencent to harvest all the League of Legends game data for some purposes.
Oh, interesting.
I haven't really thought about the implications. Thanks for that.
Yeah, virtual worlds are just going to get more and more important in the coming decade, especially because it's become mainstream form of entertainment. Like the games industry is more than double the music and movie industry. And pretty soon it's going to be the means of how music and movies are going to be generated as well. And we're going to be spending a lot more time in these worlds, and they're going to become much more important in people's daily lives. Like, it's the next social network.
One other area of curiosity is, like, you know, how do I join the Metaverse Makers Mastermind Club? How do I join M3? What is this mysterious organization that you run?
M3 is something where a bunch of developers, VR platform developers, and enthusiasts who want to build the open metaverse, we came together and we decided we can't wait for others to build this for us, though. You know, we take things into our own hands and work on compatibility and interoperability. And we meet up in hubs. It's all volunteer ran, so we're figuring out a more easier way to organize these virtual meetups. But it's taking place all on GitHub and Discord at the moment. And what it is we're just a group of makers who want to make real a practical metaverse. And we do it through, like, open products and content production, education, and fundraising. So, like, in terms of the metaverse, like, people, you know, so is it like VRChat or Minecraft, Decentraland, CryptoVoxels? We have people who are building in all these communities. And they're all amazing projects, but they're not sufficiently interoperable. And they're generally led by a single organization. So interoperability means that they should all talk to each other. And so we use this working group as a means of facilitating that cross-communication. We're all about people who want to be part of it. It's not just virtual world people, but Web3 people too, because they're providing that kind of data and transaction layer that's going to, and I think the VR 3D stuff is the UI UX layer. And so, yeah, if you wanted to join, it's github.com/m3-org. And we do regular meetups. We do research events. So we take field trips into worlds. We do write-ups afterwards. We just did a field trip through the largest virtual expo. It's organized by the Japanese VR community. They had four. That was awesome. Oh, we got lots of video. It took like 1,000+ pictures.
Yeah, time zones would suck. How do people, like, coordinate time zones? Is it like just roster based on geographic regions? It's like a big, international virtual expo hall, right?
Yeah. So it went on for almost a couple of weeks, I believe. And what we did is we organized multiple field trips to there and live streams, because it's on VRChat. So, and it's not Quest compatible. So to accommodate all the people who couldn't join us, we set up live streams with the Twitch integration in a way. So we can read the Twitch chat while we're in VR, and the person streaming had this overlay. So the Twitch chat can always see when we're paying attention to them, and we can answer questions. And it really kind of gave sense of presence for those people who couldn't join us in world, but could sort of hop on, like, in a backpack per se. And it's a really amazing way to build a community, though, a virtual market, because you get that co-presence. Like, your booth is amongst all these other booths. And once you make a booth, like, you're kind of on the map for all these people who are making virtual avatars and accessories. It's this whole ecosystem.
Just like a conference.
Exactly. And I think a lot of virtual conferences have missed out on the whole hallway/show floor expo experience. And it becomes the speaker track. That's one part of the conference, the expo track, where you can basically see the entire landscape of an industry, and all these places become kind of like a way that you can meet people with maybe even similar interests by based around where they're kind of like hanging around, what booth they're at, you know. Or, and one cool thing about virtual market is every virtual market that came out, it's been going on for 2 years, but they get archived and put online. So you can always revisit them. Meanwhile, physical conferences get torn down and right after they're over. And then you're back onto a fresh, like, page. If you want to, you know, follow up with people, it's like a blank slate. And what if you could just teleport back to where you met up with them? It allows you to also digest everything easier, because instead of compressing everything into a few days to see everything, talk to everybody, these worlds don't have to go anywhere. You can always go back and see the things that you might have missed.
It's funny that you mentioned the Twitch overlay. It's like a dystopian version of that would be like your work Slack chat. Just like probably fixed onto you. Like, hey, where are you? We need this done. Can you give me this file? Yeah, it makes sense.
Well, I think it's getting into this whole, like, how the 2D web is going to be part of the next, you know, the metaverse. It's going to become like a texture on, like, on a 3D object.
I want to find my next job through, like, you know, the metaverse and browse LinkedIn on an overlay.
The 2D web doesn't just go away when we're in the metaverse. It just becomes like, it envelops into it.
It's like this metadata layer, right? Where it provides content, context.
Yeah, I don't think, and there's so much content in 2D web. And I think it's one of the overlooked areas, like, and maybe not, because in VRChat, for instance, everybody's who's in there is living in the moment. You know, there's no smartphones or laptops. Everybody's present there. So I just wonder if we do introduce like a whole bunch of overlay tools, is that what's going to change? You know, is everybody going to like, hold on, I got a call from someone in Neos. One sec. Oh, you want me to go over there? Okay.
That would be funny. Like notifications on your virtual phone. Beautiful.
Yeah. But VR is a really cool sandbox for AR in the future. So like, you know, that Twitch chat overlay is just like a hint of what's to come in a way of like, we can prototype all these AR concepts in infinite type of environments. Meanwhile, like to do that in the real world, it's expensive and time consuming. Like what, how would this look like in the office or outdoors? And in the virtual world, you can just pop a portal, go in there and test it out. And, you know, with photogrammetry scans, like 3D scans from the real world, you can prototype all sorts of stuff. Cause like to a computer and computer vision, it's all ones and zeros anyways.
One interesting thing you talked about was that you wanted to bring Web3 to the rest of the world, right? I mean, within the VR space as well, bringing Web3 to VR chat, you know, how do you think we can bring more creators to the Web3 space and vice versa? Just, you know, generally.
Well, right now they're really siloed in terms of a lot of people don't even know why Web3 or even Bitcoin is useful to them in virtual worlds. And on the other side, in Web3, they're brand new to virtual worlds and just day one, you know? But a lot of people in Web3 are getting Oculus Quest, you know, and wanting to participate because there's such a match in there. Because on one side, they're looking for use cases to drive adoption. And on the other side, in virtual worlds, they're creating things mostly for free. And there's no kind of sense of, like, I think Web3 can bring a lot of benefit to creators and collectors and building a brand and a community, like experimenting with new business models. And so I see, like, right now, it's just we have to build a bridge between them to first talk about, like, what kinds of things that we can do. So, like, having Web3 meetups in virtual worlds, but not just like in the blockchain virtual worlds, because then you're kind of preaching to the choir. So like when I have meetups, I do them in platforms that aren't blockchain related at all, like Mozilla Hubs and VRChat. And that way we can reach new audiences and the people who need to hear about this information. Because I've been part of a lot of free and open source projects all my life. And one thing I've kind of observed from all of them is that they often trap themselves into an echo chamber, kind of just preaching to the choir, you know, so.
You talk about bringing new Web3 model business models to the VR world, but it's funny that you mentioned that because in like CryptoVoxels, we're almost seeing like the emergence of like very, very old traditional business models, but in the virtual world. For example, there's like real estate developers. There's people who are landlords. People provide, you know, if you were getting mortgages for the new parcels of land. It's like traditional forms of rent seeking still apply, and it's great. It's beautiful to like watch that kind of emerge.
It is interesting, yeah.
Right? It's like, hey, we're just selling art, you know, trading stuff. You're paying rent.
And then pretty soon, he's going to implement tipping so you can just literally throw money at people or art.
Real fundamental.
Yeah, just like the real world, right?
Yeah, we're going back to our roots. I have a quick round of quickfire questions. This is something I'm doing completely new. You know, they might be stupid questions, but okay. Firstly, say something that annoys you in the NFT space.
DeFi, in a way where it's like, you know, people who only focus on DeFi and not look at NFTs, because I noticed that a lot at F Denver, like there's a lot of people like, DeFi, hype.
Goddamn.
Yeah, but NFT land is super cool, y'all, you know.
Trash art, yes or no?
Yeah, I do a lot of 3D scanning. And a lot of my 3D scans, I've done over 500, by the way, aware of alleyways and just things that you don't want to hang around in real life. And I make art worlds out of them.
Places you don't want to hang out in real life. That sounds like a valid use case. Like prison, I don't know, like, or the desert.
Really gritty alleyways.
Yeah, I'm literally just thinking about things, places you don't want to be, right?
Because a lot of VR is sterile, you know what I mean?
Right, that's true, sterile. Okay, well, I mean, what is the most fucked up, you know, place you've kind of like scanned and mapped to? It's like a Berghain dungeon or...
I haven't really scanned anything too out there. It's just been mostly just really gritty alleys, like that sketchy things happen in. And I go in there. Oh, I mean, there's one where I keep going back to because it's just terrible, like in a good way. And piles of trash, and I keep a good distance. And people too are in there, but I don't scan people at all. I just think that I am in LA and there's a lot of homelessness. I think it'd be interesting if there's a way that if I were to make an art piece out of someone, if they could get donations somehow from it, that would be an interesting art project, but I haven't really done anything with that idea.
What's a project you're most excited about?
I would have to say MetaFactory right now is really interesting because it's blending all these kinds of things. It's blending DeFi, NFTs, virtual worlds, and avatar culture all together. And I think that is just going to be a really unique magnet. And it's in their whole manifesto. It's all about driving culture, using that to spearhead it all. So it's not just the tech that's really cool. And it's like, you know, once we have these wearables with us in virtual worlds, we have a story to tell about them as well. Like, yeah, this is a one of a kind. And so it becomes a really great education tool to talk about these Web3 concepts.
Do you have any kind of final comments?
I think, you know, to all the listeners, Meta Cartel is really cool. And the M3 organization, we've been looking at like Meta Cartel, like just being inspired by it because y'all have built like a community that, you know, for us, we haven't really figured out how to make the metaverse, open metaverse research sustainable. And we've been talking about ways of like making this working group. To make it more important, I think when you bring in different types of financial aspects to it, people take it all more seriously. And it's part of the, you know, in terms of the West, like we have this culture where it's really financially driven. In Japan, less so, but like in CryptoVoxels, it's a good example because like you got hundreds of people to collaborate on building a shared virtual world that really hasn't happened in any other platform outside of like where you make it really easy to link virtual worlds together. But even still, it's not sustainable to make it anything more than a hobby.
How do you go beyond that, right? I mean, yeah, arguably all of DeFi crypto right now is just one big hobby, right? Funded by the deliriums of the current Wall Street that's just buying into crypto. That's another story, I guess.
Yeah, it's just super inspiring to see, like, you know, like I will read through the forums and see how like proposals get made and then funded and the whole ecosystem as well. And I think that kind of organization would be like the Black Sun and Snow Crash, you know, where it's a whole bunch of people with similar like interests who want to build stuff, but not just build stuff for the sake of building things. It's like it can actually become something even more and with shared ownership of it, you know, in a way of like. Super fascinating. And I think MetaFactory is a great, shows a lot of promise in how like, you know, it becomes a factory for factories. I think once we start to see that in practice, it's going to get really interesting because already in other virtual worlds, we have virtual market and, you know, people sell avatars for a lot, like it can range from $100 to thousands of dollars each. And virtual influencers are getting much bigger as well. So like the virtual beings and VTubers are huge in Japan. We haven't really seen that in the West yet, but
we will.
We will. And it's just starting right now. And it blends in this whole like privacy aspect too.
Arguably, you know, the new fad of e-girls and e-boys have been taken from anime culture, just permeating over like a decade and suddenly like kind of just exploded for TikTok out of all places, right?
Yeah. I wonder if it's going to be like maybe snap lenses or animojis. I don't know. But like, I think, you know, the next profile pic in terms of avatars, you know what the meaning of the world is audiovisual representation of like self. And right now that is like our Flatland profile pages on these various social media networks. But the next version of that, I think, is going to be avatars, 3D. And we're going to have more ownership of them through open standards and, you know, the ability to kind of have the provenance of like, you know, the items that we wear. But it is interesting that, you know, even if like we buy and own these digital assets, like I ported my CryptoVoxels wearables into VRChat. And then right then and there, it lost its magic because it's like it just becomes another item, a 3D model that you can't verify the history of. That's a talking point in itself, you know? So it sparks a conversation.
That was an appropriate note to leave this episode on. Thank you for coming on the Wizard of Dapps podcast, Jin. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
It was an awesome chat. Thanks again. And if anyone wants to talk about the metaverse, I'm on Discord.
We'll include all the links to M3 and Jin, you know, in this podcast episode. Catch you from next week.
If you enjoyed what you listened to and are interested in supporting this podcast, then please follow us on Twitter at Wizard of Dapps. The show notes will be on our website, and if you want to continue the conversation, join our Telegram group. All links will be in the episode description. Thanks for listening.